This is Maurice Philogene, and welcome to the Try Life On podcast. Well, you may not believe it, but I've been an actor. I've tried out for the NFL, been a street cop, federal agent. I worked my way up the military chain of command to the rank of lieutenant colonel. I was also an executive at a global consulting firm, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate in the United States. I've started developing on a Mediterranean island, and to boot, I've traveled to 100 countries over 300 times, and generally all this stuff at the same time. No, I'm not trying to be everywhere. I'm not trying to do everything. What I was trying to do, and I'm still trying to do, is to try life on, to plug into planet and earth as intended, and to fill my life book with experiences and relationships, and not just accept the status quo. So what we're going to do on this podcast is introduce you to the mindset, the skill set, the soul set, the approach that is Try Life On, and expose you to the people who've been doing it just like me, their tools, their tips, their tactics to trying life on, because we all can try life on in our own way. So sit back, relax, let's go for a ride. Let's go try life on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what up? Welcome to another edition of Try Life On podcast. It is February the 27th, 2024. I need to give you guys more of a sense of where we are in time when I do these episodes. Yeah, I'm at a loss for words because I just spent time with Peter Sage, and he is one. He is a very, very intelligent, smart, incredible guy. And I mean that with all sincerity and heart behind it. We had this wide-ranging conversation about the power of the mind, the power of subconscious, the power of you leaning into life and understanding that, for example, your emotional bank leads your financial bank. Your financial bank does not, it might fill your emotional bank for a little bit of time, but it's not the leading indicator. Peter is a globally renowned serial entrepreneur. He has had a lot of businesses, but what I love about him is he's an expert in human behavior and self-mastery. That is something for you to listen to during the interview. When we got to the end of the interview, I asked him to wrap up, and he started talking about what many people do nowadays is they are worried about knowledge mastery. And knowledge mastery will make you smart, it'll make you busy, and sometimes it'll make you broke because you're just chasing stuff. But self-mastery changes everything. Self-mastery, when you understand who you are and what it is exactly that you want, and you develop the skill sets, the internal skill sets to get after it, it changes everything because your outer world flows from your inner world. And I'm experiencing that right now in my own life. For the past 25 years, I've had those three careers that you guys all know about: corporate, military, police, and even real estate. All of that stuff was external. And while I did fairly well, what I'm starting to realize, I was so focused on external for so long, I was not focused on self-mastery and internal and understanding who I was and why I do certain things. Peter really, really brought that to light in the context of helping you try life on. He has won the Brand Laureate Award. That's not insignificant. Past honorees include people like Nelson Mandela, Steve Jobs, Cristiano Ronaldo. He's done 6 TEDx events. His books have reached number one on the bestseller list, selling well into the 6 figures of copies. And he's founded multiple 8-figure businesses. And as I said, he's just a phenomenal person. You can find him on YouTube doing a lot, putting out a lot of material relative to self-mastery, to mindset, to growth, to identifying your truth, and things like realizing that we place self-destructive limitations on ourselves. We can rewire our mindsets. We can break free from procrastination. And during the interview, he talked a lot about the science-backed methodology for transforming, specifically how our mind plays such a role in who we are, what we do, and how we do it. And the one thing I love, look out for this during the interview. He talked about goop, that a lot of us are swimming in goop, and goop is the good opinion of other people. I say it all the time, opinions of neighbors, peers, coworkers, and even family stop us from doing the things we want to do. Those opinions are responsible for so many people's regrets in terms of not trying life on. He called it goop. I loved it. All right. I want you to listen to this interview with Peter Sage. It's amazing. Now, there's one caveat. At the end of the interview, I'm going to sign off at the end of the interview, but Peter and I were talking just after the interview, and I turned the recording back on because I forgot to ask him about the fact that he was in prison for 6 months, about 5 years ago, and his journey in prison and how he dealt with it. How he dealt with the internal conflicts, the external environment of where he was and why he was even there. Now, think about this. He was in prison, but he was not in prison for criminal reasons. He was in a violent prison, but for a civil reason. You got to listen to the end of the interview. The recording comes back on and you'll hear this amazing story. And that's what led him to write his book that we talk about at the end of the interview. I'm about to go buy that book. It is an interesting story. So please look out for that. This is a much longer interview than I normally do, but it's worth it. Peter is worth the listen. And I learned a lot. And this is one of those where I tend to speak a lot during my interviews and things of that nature, but I just kind of sat there and absorbed because it was a masterclass in and of itself. I hope you enjoy it. If you get a lot from this interview, please consider giving me a 5-star rating on Apple, iTunes, or Spotify. Send me a note, maurice@trylifeon.com. Again, I'm trying to get you information that will help you try life on as much as you can. I love this stuff because it just keeps putting me in front of amazing people around the world. And Peter Sage is definitely one of them. Check him out at petersage.com. But you have him here first on the Try Life On podcast. Have fun listening to my conversation with Peter Sage. What's up, Try Life On family? Welcome back to another edition. Today's edition is going to be special, and I was just talking to our guest, Peter, in the green room, if you want to call it, about how timely this brother is to the conversation of trying life on, because, as you know, and I always say, we can try life on whenever we'd like to, but there are certainly aspects to it relative to our mindset, relative to our skill set, our soul set, that if we become more conscious about it, more aware about it, we can apply it to our lives and our use cases broadly. And that's what Peter Sage is going to talk about today, in addition to a ton of other stuff. But Peter, let me just have you introduce yourself. I would have already done an intro for you before, but could you just introduce yourself to the Try Life On family and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and I love the entire concept of Try Life On. It just speaks. Yeah, so much in so few words. It's amazing. But I mean, yeah. I like to share with people, you know, sometimes there's a tendency to see people that have these incredible backgrounds or careers or journeys and kind of put them on a pedestal. And you know, while I've been very blessed and fortunate to have had quite a crazy ride like you have, Maurice, I'm just a guy, you know, I'm no more special than anybody listening. And yeah, you know, I dropped out of school at 16. I started my first business at 17. I've been unemployable for 33 years now. And essentially, you know, fell in love with the whole aspect of entrepreneurship. You know, just I'm a crazy visionary. You know, I've made a lot, lost a lot, you know, done a lot, seen a lot, had a lot of fun. And and really now just share a lot of the wisdom around that to help other people on their journey as well. So you know, my main business now is actually more speaking and coaching and training. And that was a passion for many years. But from an identity perspective, I was always an entrepreneur first and a speaker second. I've kind of combined that now. I kind of see myself as a teacher now. And by the way, it also happens to be my business. So yeah, that's been quite a profound shift over the last few years.
I bet. So what was the, and I get it. I see that in a lot of entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurialism a lot of times is just a professional and personal development journey. And then you tend to want to share it with people depending on where you are on your arc. But what were your businesses when you started and what drove you getting into those spaces?
Oh, well, my first business was actually selling toys on flea markets. And I worked for my dad for a short while. He owned his own job, essentially. He had a junkyard, like a scrapyard. And I was earning 40 bucks a week. That was my wages working for dad. Child slave labor, I guess they call it. And never work for your parents. They never pay you enough. Yeah. But I turned around to him and says, Dad, I'm leaving at the end of the week. And he said, well, what are you getting into, son? And I said, well, I don't really know, but I have a belief which I still have to this day, which is kind of in line with the philosophy that you teach, Maurice, which is if you jump in the deep end, you can only swim. And so I left my dad. I remember paying my mum £10 board. I paid my friend £10. I owed him. I had like my last 20 bucks in my name. And I walked into a wholesaler's, blagged my way in, and bought 15 bucks worth of toys. And I had my last $5. And I drove this little crappy car that was in this junkyard that nobody wanted to buy. That was kind of the rule that, you know, what I could drive. And I pulled up into this farmer's field where there was other people in their cars opening their trunks and selling stuff. And I wound down my window, my little mini, and I handed my last $5 through the window to the person on the gate to get my store, wondering if I'd ever see it again. And I sold everything for, I think it was, I bought 15 bucks of the toys. I sold it for 30 bucks. And I went back the next week. Wow. I bought 25 bucks for the toys. I had another $5 to get on the field, and I sold it for 50 bucks. And I built up and up over a few weeks till I got enough to cover a market store. And my first business was Pete's Toys. And in fact, my catchphrase was Pete the Toy Boy. I was 17. It wouldn't work today.
No, it wouldn't work today, brother. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So, and really what was interesting was that I dropped out of school. I had no qualifications. I was desperate to try to prove to the world that I was good enough.
Right.
And so my entrepreneurial fuel was really trying to get over the insecurities as a young man, as the fear that I wasn't enough. And, you know, what would people think? That was the starting impetus in my 20s, early
20s. I got you. And but was that your, I always talk about financial blueprints and family blueprints. Was your family blueprint to be an entrepreneur? Did you have that in your family, or were you kind of a, it was there?
Yeah, my dad owned his own job, but he wasn't a factory worker. He was a hard worker, but he worked hard for himself 7 days a week. My mom was a youth worker, but was always had little things on the side. Hustles and other things. And so, and for me though, what was the most defining moments were some realizations. One was when I was at school and my friends, were 16 and we're planning what we're going to do with our lives and all of this. And my friend wants to be a fireman. And, they earn like at that time, 35 years ago, it was like $200-$300 a week. And that was like big money to a school kid. And I'm thinking, I had this realization. I'm like, hang on a minute. If you're going to be paid, let's call it $200 a week. That means the job that you're doing has to be worth more than $200 a week. Otherwise, there's nothing in it for the business owner.
That's right.
So therefore, by taking a job, I will forever be paid less than what I'm worth.
I've never thought about it that way.
So that, and I made a commitment. I'm not going to work with somebody else.
Yeah. But you were young, right? There's 45 year olds and 55 year olds who don't have that perspective. You seem to have that perspective when you were in your late teens or whatever. The notion of going the regular job route, it just didn't appeal, didn't stick, and you didn't have the fear of not doing that.
No, when you start with nothing, it's hard to go down.
That's true.
And so for me it was like life was an adventure. You're just emerging out of the shell and it's like boom, let's go play. But there was one thing that really really helped, and it ties in with a lot of the philosophy I see you teach as well in terms of why people do or don't try life on. And it's the defining characteristic of an entrepreneur, in my opinion. It's not hard work. There's a lot of hardworking people that are in jobs they don't like. It's not luck, you're relying on that, you're gonna lose. It has nothing to do with family in terms of whether you had rich parents, poor parents, or which side of the train tracks you grew up in. The defining characteristic of an entrepreneur is the ability to handle uncertainty.
The ability to handle uncertainty. I have to believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't know how to handle uncertainty, you are not going to let go of your current job for something that has less certainty in it in terms of providing an income. So you're going to wait until the perfect time to start the business, and there'll never be a perfect time.
There's never a perfect time. And I talk about it as you just do and you course correct along the way. And Who said it? Steve Harvey said it. I'm sure it came from somewhere else, but I heard him say it where he's like, you know, at some point there comes a juncture where you have to jump and you're gonna fall and you're gonna nick your knees and your elbows on the cliff as you go down, but somewhere towards the bottom, your wings are gonna open and you're gonna start to fly. It's just that people are so afraid to jump. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that the uncertainty card plays such a role in people not achieving their dreams or entrepreneurial venture or whatever they want to do for their family? Why does that come in so much?
It's multifaceted, but there are some major players in the game. One of them is understanding the law of conformity. Yeah, you become who you hang with. All right, you hang around with nine recreational drug users, you're going to become the 10th. Sorry, I don't care what willpower you got. I don't care what your values are. All right, over time, environment beats will. Yeah, I can
Every
teach you
time.
how to wear warm clothes. I can teach you how to cook warm soup. I can teach you how to run on the spot and generate heat. But if you choose to live in a freezer, it's going to win over time. Yeah. So if you choose to hang out with 10 people that are looking at life through the lens of how we can, not why we can't, that come from possibility thinking, not shooting down your dreams, you are going to gravitate your mindset towards that. We're social creatures. We're programmable by environment. So, what are most people that there's two things that program most people's thinking the wrong way. One is the peer group that they have, which is usually not a peer group, it's a fear group, yeah, or a beer group. All right. The second is turning on the freaking news. All right. The news has one agenda: how to program you as to why to keep you in fear.
Of everything, of
Yeah.
everything, because that's
It
what gets
doesn't matter.
ratings.
Yeah. People haven't figured it out. You know, it's all the same news, it just happens to different people. You know, but the agenda, tell me something you read in a newspaper 3 weeks ago. People can't. It's so transient, but the theme is to shut down your optimism. And you don't want to be a pessimist and start a business.
That's which is hard. And I sense there's this movement, at least it happened to me, and maybe just my reticular activating system is picking up on other people doing it the same. But I sense there's a bit of a movement of people shutting off the news, starting to realize that it's a depressant. It keeps you from actually living life. I remember in my military days, I got offered to be the special agent in charge of a federal law enforcement field office in Izmir, Turkey, for the Department of Defense, US Department of Defense, but in Izmir, Turkey. And my parents were very heavy CNN watchers, and there was always stuff on Turkey in the news. And they're like, "Nah, you should not go there. It's not safe. It doesn't work." And da da da. Well, I went, and it was one of the most glorious things that has ever happened in my life. It just like there's places in Chicago you don't want to go. There's places in Turkey you might not want to go. Or I spend a lot of time in Lebanon nowadays. There's places in Lebanon you shouldn't go. But it is interesting to me how programming that's it's systematic programming that comes on either 24 hours a day or at 6 p.m. local time, right? It's always there. People miss it. The other thing I would add to that, and I'd like your input on it, is I say, and this is true in my own journey, 20 to 30 years of formal education has told us what to be, where to go, what success looks like, to compete with each other. AP classes, you got to get to Yale. Who's the MVP? Who's the valedictorian? And then, hey, go work for the great company Google because it's the best company. Okay, I'll go work there. We're just on this societal definition of success that people tend to not want to break away from. And it leans into what you said, which I love, which is the law of conformity, because I kind of, and someone said this, but I kind of see the law of conformity as the opposite of courage. The herd goes right, so you go right. Whereas there's something burning in your soul that you want to do, but it's over to the left and you're afraid to go left. Do you see school, like formal school, as one of those conforming mechanisms that gets people to not jump at what they want?
So school teaches you two things: how to pass tests and work for somebody else. Right? It's like, you know, how can I validate my own identity and significance by getting a piece of paper that tells me I've got a good memory to memorize answers to questions that are meaningless in reality? 85 to 90% of what people are studying right now will be obsolete in the current market by the time they graduate, period, just on how fast it takes or how slow it takes to get something on a curriculum. And I just laid off nine staff. All right. Why? Because AI has just replaced what they can do. And luckily, you know, I train my people to be all exceptionally resourceful. They've been released into their, you know, their own lanes now to do what they want to do.
Right.
And utilize, you know, what they did with me as an opportunity to learn from, to be able to move forward and capitalize on the same. But you can't stand still these days. If you think that waving a piece of paper around that's been signed by somebody you've never met, that validates you based on memory to, you know, memorizing answers to questions that are not that relevant, is going to get you happiness, life, and fulfillment, it ain't going to work. So yes, you're programmed. And the way that I love how you put it, Maurice, but there's a metaphor that I use that I think people will appreciate and relate to. I'll share it with you.
Right? Okay.
We all star in a movie, right? Hands down. Yes. It's unequivocal. Yep. And it's the movie of our life. And I know that you star in the movie of your life, as does everybody else. Yes. Why? Because they're the only people in every single scene of the movie of their life. Which means that by definition, everybody else in your movie plays one of two different roles. Either, at best, a supporting cast, sibling, business partner, parent, best friend. But the vast, vast majority of people, certainly the ones you're trying to get the certificate to impress, are nothing more than film extras in your movie. Now, what's the definition of a film extra? Somebody you're no longer thinking about when they're not in your current scene. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The fact that you see yourself as the star of your movie, we make the mistake a lot of the time of thinking that everybody else sees us as the star of our movie. But they don't. Because they're not starring in your movie, they're starring in a different movie.
They're in their own.
Which means by definition, we play one of two roles in everybody else's movie.
At in best, everybody else's movie.
A handful of people, we may be a supporting cast. But 99.99% of people that are out there, the ones that we try to get approval from, external validation from, worry about what we look like when we go down to the mall from, we're nothing more than a film extra in their movie, which means...
Wow.
That they don't care enough about you to bother to give an opinion. Why? Because they're too busy being worried about what they think you're thinking of them. Welcome to reality.
Yep. And I think people inherently know that, but I always say that we're it's hitting home for me. I explain it to my son. What you explain as extras. We should be the star of our own movie, right? There are extras running around. I explain that. I explain that to my son in the context of video games, and I say, "Sweetheart, you know the guy or gal that you're controlling? Yeah, that's you. That's your life. You're in control of it. You run where you want. You make decisions. You see all the other characters, the that the computer is controlling that just run in and out. That's the rest of the world." It's just non-player characters that are running around doing weird things. Now let's go. I say this facetiously, but I actually mean it. Let's go to the stoplight. The next time we're at the stoplight, look around and just see what everybody is doing and see if they actually care that you and I are in this car. No. So you and I have to make vicious decisions for our own lives to go do what we do. And that's what I was telling you. At age 33, I was like, man, I really want to be a police officer before I die. So it was at age 28, I made that decision and I was still an executive during the day. So I found a way to go be a police officer. I just never told anybody because it didn't matter. The opinions of others weren't going to have any impact on what I did. So I just did it. And now years later, I retired 2 years ago, but years later, I'm like, thank God I went and I did that and had that experience. Peter, how do you get people to wake up? How do we help people wake up to the fact that they are in control, that they do not have to follow the status quo, that there exists, I call it another plane, another realm of living, one that you can truly plug into planet and Earth as intended, where the outcomes that you want are literally right there if you make an effort towards it. How do you help people wake up from that?
It's as much about stopping what's preventing it. Yeah, a cork will naturally rise, but if it's got lead coating on it, it's not coming to the surface, right? You don't teach a lead cork how to swim, you simply teach it how to let go of the lead, right? And it'll come up. So most people have a lot of blockages around, you mentioned it, I call it goop, Most people swim in goop, G-O-O-P, a nasty, horrible, sticky substance called, it smells. G-O-O-P, the good opinion of other people.
Yes.
And if you spend your life swimming in goop, you ain't going nowhere that's any good. And so
the
how do you get out of that?
Good opinion of other people. Wow. Okay. Yes. How do we get out of that?
Well, first is to understand that nobody else cares enough about you to bother to give an opinion because they're too busy starring in their own movie being insecure about what they think you're thinking of them. Right? Because they're playing the same game. Then we wake up and have understand that life, that there's a couple of realizations. You can't educate yourself out of insecurity. You have to evolve because there is a huge difference between emotional maturity and biological maturity. Biological maturity, we don't get to vote. You know, that's going to happen. Yeah, a six-year-old can't be a teenager for Christmas. You know, and and on the flip side, there is a lot of emotional maturity is a choice, and there are a lot of emotional teenagers running around in some pretty old bodies. Probably notice that. And so, how do you shift? You need to be able to evolve past that, rather than try to cram yourself with more knowledge, trying to figure it out. And there's a couple of realizations that really help people. The first is understanding that one of the greatest days in a human being's life is the day they wake up to realize that life is not a comfort-centric experience, it is a growth-centric experience. And if you're trying to live your life as a comfort-centric experience, it's gonna slap you.
Wow.
Now, when you understand that we have, as a human being, we are the perfect encapsulation of physical and non-physical in one amazing package. See, we have a physical body, and a lot of people mistakenly identify themselves as their body. But if I was to cut off my arm right now, I'd have 15% less body, but I wouldn't be 15% less me. See, what
You're
makes
still there.
You is the non-physical. It's the invisible stuff. It's your personality. It's your hopes, your dreams, your vision, your sense of humor, your all of that stuff that if I was to take that out of you and put it in somebody else, it'd be you with a different body, right? So the non-physical is where it's at. Now, when it comes to understanding neuroscience, your brain operates at different wavelengths. That's a fancy term for cycles per second or hertz.
Yes.
Now, when we identify with our body, our brain is operating above 12 hertz, above 12 cycles per second. And what that does, it means that our outer world is more our focus, more important, more real than our inner world. In other words, we are now reacting to circumstance. We're not creating circumstance. It is a fear-based power, which is great. It's how we've evolved. Because if there's a time—
Wait, I missed something. If what? We are reacting, not creating. If what? If you're at a certain vibration?
If you're at a higher level of brain frequency, right? If you're at a higher gear, you're using prefrontal cortex, for example, right?
Yes.
You're figuring stuff out. You're trying to, you're trying to engage from essentially a physical perspective. You're dealing with the current scene in your movie. And there is practical reasons for doing that. You know, if you're driving and there's a red light, you've got to press the brake. Yeah, you're not going to meditate your way out of a tiger attack. Right? You know, we need to be in the physical world. We are physical beings. But if we get stuck there where fear will keep you, fear raises your brain into high beta, right? Which means that now I'm looking for where's the threat. Yeah, and that's why if you watch, what do you got, CNN, constant negative news, right? If you actually watch that, you're going to be programmed into a fear-based reality. And Einstein said something profound. He said that the most powerful question a person could ask or answer in their lifetime is, do they live in a friendly or a hostile universe? And if you are constantly stressed, anxious, surrounded by people that are always complaining or looking for the next hole in the donut, you're going to be constantly at a high brainwave rate, which is going to allow you to deal with the outer world. It's like you need to control. Now, if you're able to separate that, let's say you live in a friendly universe. Let's say that in order to move from hostile to friendly, what have you got to give up? What do you got to replace it with? Well, the first thing you've got to give up is the need for control. I didn't say control itself, but most people are trying to control what they can't control and then they get stressed. What do you replace it with? You have to trust in something bigger than you.
Faith.
Faith, trust, knowing, something more important than the little version of you. You can call that
Something
higher
bigger than you.
power, you can call it God, you can call it,
You
I
call it
don't care the
universe,
label.
anything.
The
I get it.
travesty of
I get
humanity is we've spent centuries going over to war and killing each other for so whose label for that is right. So if you can give up the need for control and replace that with faith, you can start living more in a friendly universe. If you get fired from your job, you get excited because you're part of a bigger picture. Life's happening for you, it's not happening to you. And then you have a very different relationship. Now, what Einstein was actually getting at, and I say this to people, it's an eye-opener. There is no friendly universe, there is no hostile universe. When you understand how the game works, you realize it is a self-reflective universe.
Comes from your mind.
You choose to live in a friendly universe, you're going to have a different experience. You choose to believe in magic, you're going to live a magical life. You choose to believe that there's monsters in the closet, you're going to not struggle to sleep at night. It is a self-reflective universe, and you get to stand in front of that as the star of your movie and now start directing rather than trying to improv the scenes.
That hits hard because on episode 42, I introduced the Try Life On community to someone by the name of Rhonda Farah. She calls herself an alchemist, but she's an old behavioral specialist and therapist and things of that nature. And we were talking quite a lot about faith, law of attraction, universe, Tom and Jerry, I don't care what you want to call it, but just something higher than yourself. And I said to, or I articulated to the community, I said, last year was a rough year. Like I kind of broke apart last year and I needed to kind of shut down because the journey that I told you about, that was, it was long. I didn't realize that I was so external. I had built all these careers. I had seen all these things. You can imagine in my military days and in my midnight Washington, D.C. police days, how many bad things I've seen. And I internalized all of them and it all caught up to me in a big way. And, I need what I understand now, 9 months later, is kind of what you're saying, which is I needed to understand something bigger than me and choose the world that I want to exist in. It was just bad. Everything going on mentally for me seemed to be out of alignment. I was trying to solve problems through external or through validation or through other people and things of that nature. When in fact, no, I could actually, and then taking on their definitions of what I needed to be doing. No, I could actually make a decision for myself, create my own reality mentally, a positive one, stay away from the things that would trigger me back to old realities, if you will, and keep myself more so. We're human, we will revert to things from time to time, but keep myself in a place of positivity, light, sharing. Non-negative, like CNN ain't going, I'm not watching that stuff. I prefer to view the world in my own right, which is why I go places where people don't go, because I believe that people are generally good. You got to be careful, but people are generally good. It's tough to explain to people. I don't really think there's a lot of answers on the outside. I think most of the answers are right on the inside. And that's kind of what you talk about when you say, destroying the self-imposed limitations that we place on ourselves, we can literally break them down. It feels like we can literally break them down. And I know you talk about that a lot. Is that what you're trying to espouse to people of it's just your decision, actually?
If
Getting
only
people to see
it,
it must be difficult.
if only it was that simple. I'm going to give you a phrase to remember and write down.
Love it. Yeah.
The answers are in alpha. The answers are in
The
alpha.
answers are in alpha.
Yes. I talked about what happens when you're in a beta brainwave state. You get stressed, you start to control, you feel, you have a whole biochemical shift that places you on alert. Most people's cortisol is so, their baseline is so artificially raised, they don't even know, they normalize it, right? Now, if you can drop your brainwaves to about 11, 10 hertz, 10 cycles per second, you will immediately start to get a shift in your biochemistry that will drop you from a frontal lobe, a prefrontal cortex, primary centered, centric experience into a more internal, intuitive, gut feel, meditative type feel where the answers will come to you. You're not hunting them. Question is, how do you
How do
do
you
that
slow it
with?
down? How do you I intuitively I understand what you're saying, but how do you consciously, maybe it's not consciously, but how do you consciously slow brainwaves down a bit?
You can do it in 120 seconds with a hack.
Okay, hit me.
The one part of the bodily function that you can actually have total control over, conscious control, or hand it over to the autonomic nervous system. There's only one function of the body you can do that with, and that's breathing. Everything else, you don't get a vote, right? So, breathing. If you were to take, it's like being on a horse. You can actually pick the reins up and direct the horse, or you can drop the reins and let the horse walk itself. Right? That breathing's the only thing you can do that with. You can't do it with digestion. You can't do it with growing your hair, blinking your eyes. More than 5 minutes. You get the idea. So if you take conscious control of your breathing, and you breathe in for 6 seconds, that's a long breath for most people. Most people are shallow chest breathers. You'll need to breathe in to your belly for 6 seconds on what's called a circular rate, which means there's no pause at the top, there's no pause at the bottom. You breathe in for 6 seconds, you breathe out for 6 seconds. That's 12 seconds. You do that 10 times through your nose, providing it's not blocked. Nasal breathing spirals the air through the vortex of the nose, so it hits a certain part of the lungs, which it activates more oxygen uptake. Right? Most people that are mouth breathers never get to experience that. So if you breathe in 6 seconds, out 6 seconds, through your nose while smiling, which releases different chemicals in the brain, different neurotransmitters, different neuropeptides, over 2 minutes, you will drop your blood pressure, lower your heart rate, and your brain will dip below beta. Fascinating.
Does it stay? How do you keep it
I
there?
mean, if you want to go think of all the crap that's going on in your life after that and reject your
It's gonna go right
cortisol,
back up.
then
It's
yeah,
gonna
you
go
get
right back
up.
up.
But now you're aware of it. So what do you focus on during that time? This is where we direct our movie rather than react to our movie. And that's where most people don't have, let's call it your ideal day. If you wrote out what your ideal day is, and I'm sure you do this with your clients or a variant of it,
Absolutely,
right?
absolutely. It's the first step.
Yeah. You get that ideal day, you focus on that, smiling, breathing 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, and tell me what happens after 2 minutes. Now you can do it for 5 minutes, you want to feel even better. But in 2 minutes,
You're just
you will
happy.
normalize your blood oxygen levels and your CO2 levels. You will reset the stress levels between your parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. Yeah, your brain waves will drop. Slow down, you become calmer, your immune system will start to regulate. I could go on and on in terms of the biochemical benefits of being able to do that, but ultimately, without having to worry about it, you will feel better. And from that place, you can start using intention to ask questions or just be in the space of a question. What should I do? Is this the business that I really should start? Or am I doing it to prove to my brother that I'm as good as he is? Is this a time where, I should leave the job that I've been scared to leave, but my heart is screaming at me I should? You'll get your answer. But the answers are in alpha.
Wow. Which is the lower the lower waves.
Slower brain wavelength, correct. It's funny
Slower
because I
brain
told
wave.
you we are physical and non-physical, right?
Yes.
So when you identify physically, and just getting into a little bit of the understanding for in quantum mechanics,
yeah,
we are both wave and particle. Yeah, wave is energy, particle is matter. So the body is particle. Okay. The energy of us, the mood, the emotional state, is very much measured in wave. You can look at that through Carillion photography or many other modality. Now, so our level of consciousness, and some people don't like the word, call it awareness if you want. So we are both wave and particle in one. We're physical and non-physical. We've established that. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are scared, stressed, anxious, depressed, worried, nervous, or just trying to control reality, you have less wave and you become more particle. You're more identified with the body. Now, if you identify with the body, guess what? You have a nervous system in the body that is hardwired for comfort, which is fabulous when it comes to not sitting on an ant's nest, or standing too close to a fire. But if we identify with the body and we think we're our body and we're constantly in a beta brainwave state, and we're trying to control the outer world to carve our life that we want, we're battling, which means that we are then seduced into a comfort-centric mindset. We're always trying to get somewhere to get more comfortable or feel more certain or have less stress. And it never happens. It's always tomorrow, right? But if we are able to get in touch with lowering the brainwaves, we become more identified with the wave and less with the particle. Because while our body is hardwired for comfort, our soul is hardwired for growth. And growth, you take on challenges because it's who you are. Mm-hmm. You don't try to avoid them. Mm-hmm. If imagine you were an athlete, but you didn't know you were an athlete. And you were put in the gym. And you had this mean psychopath called a personal trainer that was forcing you to do push-ups until your arms hurt, or deadlifts until you your hamstrings were on fire. And you would have a natural resistance to that if you had a comfort-centric mindset, right? If you didn't know you're an athlete. But if you know you're an athlete and you know your mission is to get that Olympic gold, if your personal trainer is not making you throw up in 30 minutes, you want your money back, right?
Absolutely.
And if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I've got a great way you can cheat on your workout, you're like, get the hell out of here. I'm not interested. I'm here because
You don't want to cut corners.
You don't want to cut corners because it's who you are. It's what you do. You know that that's why you're there. Now, for most people, they are currently in a workout. The weight on the bar is their problems. It's their challenges, and it's tough. I get it. There's people listening now that may have just lost their job, or a loved one, or got a diagnosis they don't like. There's weight on the bar. Welcome to life. We all have our story, right? Mm-hmm. However, if you take the mindset of the muscle fiber, imagine you're busting out a curling on the bar right now, and you're busting out, maxing out on a arm curl. If you take the mentality of the muscle fiber, what's going on? You're screaming. Stop. You're sending messages to the brain. What the hell are you doing? You're sending pain signals. You're being broken down. Mm-hmm. But if you take the mindset of the athlete, they're not listening to that. They're proud they can bust out another two reps and not lift their arms for 5 minutes. So how do you then understand that life is a growth-centric experience? You can't do it if you're listening or identifying to your body, stressed out, looking, trying to control life. 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out. 2 minutes, you calm that system down. You're now more identified with who you are, why you're here, the non-physical. And now you're listening to vision. You're listening to possibility.
Yes.
Getting answers from a different place. Does this make sense?
The gut. Well, yes, no, totally it makes sense. How do you, so most, a lot of the people who are listening now, just in the last few minutes, a lot of the people who are listening now, they are, for a lot of folks want change. They want change. They want to leave the corporate thing that they've been doing for so long, but can't seem to get over the hump, or They want to pick up their family and have a different experience because they're conforming, if you will. Let's say, I won't use me as an example, but there's a family I can think of. They were living in Arizona for so long, and it was just kind of the ho-hum thing, and they wanted to shift, possibly move to a different country and have a different feeling on a day-to-day basis, but there was so much fear pent up in it, they just couldn't get themselves to do it. How do you apply everything that you just said? In theory, it makes sense to me. So your answers come from a different place, but how does that translate into the real world?
Yeah.
Just think about the normal dude and normal gal listening right now is like, yeah, it makes sense, but how do I use it?
Two steps, right? So the first step is to find out what is your truth. Yeah, not your manufactured pseudo truth, which is, oh, I need to please mom and dad by working in the corporate ladder so they can be proud, or being a doctor when I don't want to be a doctor or a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. It's not what's calling my heart, but I'm doing it because, it's a false goal that you've been seduced into chasing to try to externally validate yourself in somebody else's movie. So getting into an alpha state and asking questions, you actually will start hearing more truth, your truth. So that's being able to identify it. It'll light up. When your heart and mind are shaking hands in a way that lights you up, you know it's there. At least you've got your target. Now, acting on that, I know I should get out of Arizona and move to another country. I know that's my truth, but I've got all this fear.
Yeah.
Acting on that is the next step. Right? And that's where getting a bigger why is a huge part of this. You write down 100 reasons why you must do this. You write down 100 reasons why your life will suck if you don't. It brings it home pretty strong. Short practical exercise.
Yeah.
But I also want to chunk up. We are going to have a final scene in our movie. Just part of the game. So when it comes to understanding, what do I want to do at the end of this movie? Because if I turn around and say, if only, I'm going to feel pretty crap about the movie I just shot. I want to be able to get to the end of my movie and say, if I'm lucky enough to choose the last words, I'm like, wow, now that was a movie I would pay to see again. Now, what makes a great movie? Well, if you're comfort centric, it's going to be a boring movie. If you're soul centric, you're going to go on the adventure. So you take what makes a great movie? I'll give you a clue. Nobody pays good money to watch James Bond or Mission Impossible Tom Cruise spend 90 minutes rescuing a kitten out of a tree.
Right.
What makes a great movie? Everything. You've got drama and intrigue and comedy and tragedy and it's the entire gamut. That's the movie you're starring in.
Wow.
And I've never met anybody, and I've been around people who have come to terms with their mortality, whether they've got hours, days, or weeks left. And do you know what I've never heard? I've never heard somebody turn around and say on their deathbed, something, please go fetch me my mahogany framed MBA certificate.
Yes.
Please go get me all the houses I own.
It's very true.
Please go get me my stock certificate. No. What do they say? Please go get me the people that I love so I can tell
that
them.
That I love, Or they talk about their memories or something. Yeah. Man, I to validate what you just said, when I left my police department, I like to volunteer a lot. So I volunteered at one of the retirement homes that I used to respond to calls at. It was a challenge that I heard from Gary Vaynerchuk, actually. So I went to go do it. So I volunteered there for 3 days. 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds, actually a couple of centenarians, beautiful people, beautiful. Even if they weren't totally lucid, it's okay. Like they're in that chapter of life. But I tell people in some posts sometimes, none of them were talking about the titles they had or the house that they had or the mahogany frame MBA that they had. They were talking about the girl they didn't ask out, the plane rides they didn't take, the entrepreneurial thing they didn't do, or the thing they didn't tell their wife before their wife passed on or something. It was all regret. Now, they had beautiful lives, but the things they keyed in on was the things that they couldn't quite get their opportunity to do. And in many cases, it was what you espouse, which is they subscribe to some kind of conformity for 20 years too long, and then they realize it a bit late, and they just didn't have the opportunity to go back to do those things. Hearing you say it the way you're saying it, man, it is very powerful. I mean, I say certain things in a different way, but not with your scientific knowledge behind it, about identifying your truth, which I usually help people bring out as writing down the perfect day with enormous detail and emotion to it. And inevitably, of course, Peter, when people write down their perfect day, the first iteration is a responsible day because they've forgotten how to dream. We've all forgotten how to dream as adults, as if we can't vision. That second step that you bring up, that acting, doing it, getting a bigger why, I think is so important. But I want to bring people back to your comment before of believing in something bigger than yourself, whatever that thing may be, to give you a bit of comfort to just make the jump in some fashion. Because as you say, we're all going to have a last chapter of our movie, what have you. Last thought. I know that this is very powerful to me, especially because of where I am on my journey. And that's why I'm grateful to you, because something is happening in my journey where I'm starting to have a lot of self-reflection on how I got where I got, why I did the things that I did, such that my next chapters, I'm not making some of the mistakes I made in my primary chapters, which in some cases, chasing a bit of money and things of that nature. I'm just not interested. I'm much more interested in a fulfilling life or what have you. I know that you do a lot of talks and you've done a lot of TED Talks. What's the number one theme? I know you can speak on a lot of topics. We are amazing creatures, so there's a lot to us. But what's the major thing that you try and get across to people, and what you would leave this audience with in terms of one thing that they can do to try life on, in addition to all the beautiful things you've already said? But what is the magnanimous theme that you truly try and get across to people? And when you walk out of the auditorium or that room, you're like, yes, I think they got it. What's that for you?
It's a two-stage response, if I may. And that is,
please, yeah,
shifting the paradigm between what we've been conditioned to in terms of knowledge mastery. Most people think that they just need to learn the next thing, right? If I just master business, if I just master Facebook ads, if I just master real estate investing, if I just like learn this, the reason I'm not so happy or successful is I haven't learned how to be. I'm missing the latest AI, blah, blah, whatever it is. And what they're doing, they're focused on knowledge mastery. Knowledge mastery will keep you smart, it'll keep you busy, and it'll keep you broke.
Yeah.
You know, self-mastery changes everything.
Wow.
If you can understand the concept, outer world follows inner world, case closed. You have an emotional bank account, you have a financial bank account. I got news for you. Most people's emotional bank account follows their financial bank account. Have you noticed that? Yeah, your financial bank account's low, their emotional bank account's low. The financial bank account goes up, their emotional bank account goes up. But it never lasts. Mm-hmm. Why? Because your emotional bank account is the leading indicator, not the lagging indicator. If you want your financial bank account to go up, your emotional bank account has to go up first. Outer world follows inner world. When you have that switch, it's a game changer. And when you realize that, what is the real reason we're here? Now, again, I'm hypothesizing my version. I've got no right to tell anybody else.
Sure, sure. The world according to. I'm good with it. Yep, yep.
But there's an overarching umbrella that is pretty hard to ignore. You look at the last 400 million years of fossil records, and what it shows is that evolution is constantly iterating more complex versions of itself. You go back to an amoeba, a single cell organism. You take a human body, 50 trillion cells. What's the difference? Right? Well, if you take 50 trillion individual amoebas and you introduce one food source, what do you got? War, right? Yeah, you take a human body, 50 trillion cells, and you introduce one food source, you don't have war. You don't have the liver and the heart ganging up against the kidneys and the spleen to see who gets the most hemoglobin out of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what makes evolution work? And what makes it not work? Evolution, it's unequivocal. 400 million years of fossil record shows us that it is constantly reinventing itself into higher forms of complexity. That's self-evident. However, in order to make that complexity work, we need one thing: cooperation. Mm. You can't have the cells in your body fighting each other. We call that an autoimmune disease.
I see.
So evolution works on cooperation, not competition. You have 50 trillion individual amoebas and one food source. You got competition. Now, if you take the word cooperation and you extrapolate that to its logical conclusion, in my mind, you come to one destination: love.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we really here? We're here to learn how to love. And when you come from that place, rather than competing with everyone else, being the single amoeba trying to get your share of food, and you step into your own nature and your own greatness and you own your own divinity at that level, life absolutely shifts. Then your outer world will start transforming on its own, because your inner world has a completely different sense of identity.
My speechlessness is in reflection of my own journey and that of many others that I seem to be talking to now, who are at this stage in life where they're very much so looking inward instead of all the things that they've created over their life. I don't know if that's the midlife crisis thing. I'm not totally sure what it is. I'm 48. I just noticed that people in my space, we're all, my circles anyway, tend to be looking inwards a lot to figure out what it is we are supposed to be doing, why we feel a certain way and what have you. The when you talk about cooperation, I find myself not interested in competing with people for anything. I'm much more interested in supporting people to create things nowadays, whether it's backing them financially or giving them entrepreneurial advice or lending my name or my balance sheet for credibility, or even coming on this or creating a podcast platform where I can at least get information out from my perspective, the way that you get out in your amazing talks. A lot of our journeys, and I'm talking to the community, a lot of our journeys are external. It's what we were taught. We were taught to go get the career. We were taught to go get the wife or the husband. We were taught to get the white picket fence, the 2.5 kids and a dog. It's just how we were taught to do things. And when I hear you talk about the internal and how evolution works, and the biggest one for me actually was your financial bank or other banks follow your emotional bank or your internal first. That's the one that comes first. It all truly does make sense to me. Man, this has been powerful. I think you were placed in my path for a reason. I don't discount why the universe does certain things when he does it, because if you would have said all this to me 3 months ago, I don't absorb it for some reason. Today I absorbed it. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for the universe putting you on my path, and I'm sure the listeners are as well. Where can they learn more about you if they, and I know that they will, where can they go to learn more about you and track you down?
PeterSage.com is my main website. I registered that in 1996.
Nice.
been around a
Way
while.
To be. Yeah. Yeah, man.
but yeah, I'm on YouTube. I put a lot of stuff out there to try to help as many people as I can. Yeah, obviously, we've got our own courses and programs and things, but for those that aren't ready at that level, I've got a ton of stuff and resources I put out there. My book, The Inside Track, has changed the lives of pretty much everybody that's read it. That's a whole nother story, which we'll get probably next time around, Maurice, we'll get into. But yeah, same with you. We're on a path where you understand that when you're outer world focused and you're trying to battle with life and you're dealing with lack of courage or demons or any of that kind of internal struggle to justify why you're playing smaller than you are, right? Yeah, when you come from that place, it's sticky. It's the warning light on the dashboard, right? It's not what you're meant for, right? When you start to realize that you are the star of your movie, no matter what, you were here to win that Academy Award, right? When you realize that, all the money in the world. I mean, I've got a phrase. Some people are so poor, all they have is money. And when you start to realize that there is a huge difference between a life-chasing success and a life-chasing fulfillment, you get onto the path of asking better questions. And I love what you're doing, Marissa. I love what you're doing with your tribe. I love that the message you're bringing out. You know, people ask me, what's the most valuable thing I own? And I tell them my failures.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, they're the most expensive, valuable things I treasure. Right? Some people have this sticking nose to failure because they confuse their self-worth with their net worth. And if you ever do that, you're never going to get off the couch.
No, it's true, man. I totally see it. And that external, man, I hope people start looking inwards is all I'm going to say. I look forward to reading your book. I have consumed some of your material on YouTube, but I look forward to doing way more of it. You are doing a service to a lot of people. I just hope that they are ready to absorb it the way that I have absorbed it today. But that's okay. That's people's journey. People have to come to a realization on their own. You can't force people. It's just whenever you do. And I know there's going to be more for me to learn down the road, but this was certainly a large segment for me. I want to say thank you. Thank you for spending time with me, even a little bit of extra time. It's been awesome to be blunt. And it was just my pleasure to meet you today.
Absolute pleasure as well. As I said at the beginning in a little green room session, that I really hope that our conversation adds some value to the tribe. I'm sure it has, and people will pick up what's relevant for them. I send them nothing but love. I send total love and respect to yourself and what you're doing. And I'm sure our paths are going to cross again.
They will. They will. Thanks, Peter.
Pleasure.
I do remember reading that, but I was so fascinated about the mind stuff. I forgot to even go there. You were in prison, in a violent prison, as the only non-violent prisoner for 6 years?
No, the only non-criminal.
Non-criminal? What were you doing there?
Never been charged of a crime, never been accused of a crime, never been found guilty of a crime. Yeah, I was a civil prisoner. I was arguing a litigation deal with a multi-billion dollar company over a multi-million dollar deal we'd done years before. And they threw in a contempt of court application that I thought was a joke. I thought it was a chess move, trying to pressure me. They sold it to the judge. I was on a state-appointed attorney because they froze my accounts. They had a $100 million law firm. It was only going one way. Sold it to the judge. He gave me
against
6 months.
You.
Yeah. 6 months in prison as a civil prisoner.
For out of contempt?
Contempt.
Wow.
I lost everything. My business, my wedding, my everything. 5 years ago, I came out of jail $250,000 in debt. I had no credit rating.
This is just 5 years ago. So 11 years ago, this is 5 years ago, you went to prison.
Yeah.
And
while I was in there, I decided I wasn't going to go in as a prisoner. I went in as a secret agent of change. That was my identity walking in. That I chose. Okay. You and I can help a lot of people, but some people in jail never get to experience your podcast or my work.
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
But I thought, if the universe is sending me somewhere to go help, let me go help. And every 2 weeks I wrote to my senior advanced students showing them what I was doing to deal with it, to cope with it myself, to transform lives in there, stopping suicides, getting people off drugs. I rewrote the intake system to reduce violence between the wings that's now being used in prisons all over the world, including the US. I won a national award for the work that I did in there. And when I came out, my students said that the letters that I'd wrote, they'd learned more from them than following me around the world for years on stage. And I should publish it to the public because it would help a lot of people.
Isn't that funny how that happens? That's crazy how that happens sometimes when it's one of the smaller things that has the larger, well, it wasn't small, but it had a major impact versus you necessarily being on stage. Yeah, so that's what the book is based on.
I published it. It's called The Inside Track. Yeah. And it's literally just the 11 letters that I wrote. It's not edited. It's happening in real time as I'm going through the experience, showing you how I'm doing it, what techniques I'm using, how I'm trying to change the system from the inside, how I'm dealing with losing everything, my mindset, the tools that you can apply every day. And it's been phenomenal. We've had some of the greatest names in personal growth say it's the best book they've ever read.
Wow. Well, I will be picking that up today. I can imagine what you felt like being there. I used to put people there all the time. I actually went once in my life too, but not in under those kinds of circumstances for sure. But that must have been gut-wrenching for you.
I'll let you read the book.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I'll check it out. All right, man.
The most the most exciting adventure I've ever had the privilege of living.
Yeah, let's not do it again. But if you have to, you'll know how to handle it. But I meant what I said, Peter. If there's something I can do for you, you let me know. If you need another face or another voice for something, you let me know. What you're doing and trying to wake people up, and you have a little bit for me, is necessary. It's absolutely necessary. And I know you don't have to. I know you're doing it because you want to. So I'm grateful for that.
No, likewise. It's always an honor when I cross paths with a brother, then you've got a soul connection. So I feel that we're going to be spending more time in each other's circle, my
I hope
friend.
so. I hope so. All right, my man. Take care of
Outstanding.
yourself. Thank you for
You too.
such time today. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, my friend. Speak
Okay.
soon.
Bye-bye. Hey guys, this is Maurice, host of the Try Life On podcast, and thank you for listening to another episode. I hope you are finding it useful in helping you design your own lifestyle that you don't need a vacation from. If that's the case, please consider dropping a review for me, whether in Apple, iTunes, or in Spotify. Drop a review, put some stars on it, give me some feedback on how I can make the podcast better, what information you are looking for. I am doing my best to get information to you on the Try Life On principles, the five freedoms, how to build lifestyle, travel hacking, all of it. And I want to do it for you. So please do a review for me. And until next time, my name is Maurice Philogene, and this is the Try Life On podcast. Peace.